5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott. Lovely to have your company once again. With me, as always, Robin Christofferson's here from AbilityNet. Hello to you, sir.
Hey, Stephen.
We've got Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello.
Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin.
You love the way I do that.
The dot com.
And, yes. Oh, let's not forget, we've got the return of the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Emails.
Email.
Andy.
Yes.
We get
and
email.
Here's Andy.
We get your email everywhere.
Yeah, that's kind of terrible. Andy Wentz here.
I'm back.
It's been so long.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks. No, hang on. No, it's not. It's been like a year, hasn't it? I don't know. How long has that off?
Yeah, well, you decided all to talk about WWDC last week, and I took a step back.
Yeah, you could not be bothered with all that.
Well, after joining us for the two-hour keynote, I think poor Andy was just done with WWDC.
Yeah. No wonder.
Sean and I went off to recuperate somewhere else.
Yeah. Exactly. He was utterly bored out of it, quite frankly. We've got lots coming up on the show this week. Negative Julian gets in touch, and he is going to be giving us his take on the Google Luca app. You might remember a good few episodes ago, we had Devinder Kular tell us all about the Google Luca app. Negative Julian has some comments on that feature. So he is going to be joining us to tell us about that. Also, Diabetes Awareness Week is this week. And a question for a lot of people who are diabetic, what tech is out there to help us monitor our diabetes as blind or partially sighted people? Well, Madeline Bloom is joining. Actually, I should say Torsten Bloom is joining us. Madeline's actually who put me in touch with Torsten, because that's her husband who got in touch from the Tech for Life team. Torsten is here to tell us what he has found, and he's actually been researching this along with Madeline. So we'll get into that, and we're getting your feedback as well from the email inbox. I'm assuming, and of course, as we all know, we measure our emails and our feedback in pages. So how many pages are we dealing with today, Andy?
Well, yes, we haven't been in the email inbox for a while, so it's now back up to 8 pages.
8 pages?
Thank you to everyone, by the way, because we've not said this. Maybe you said this last week. But thank you to everyone who's continued to email in while we had some time off. There's a lot of good messages in there for you, Stephen, wishing you well. So thank you for everyone for continuing to fill up our inbox.
I like that Andy's the nice guy around here. You know, it makes me look terrible. You're absolutely right to say that.
My position, I'm out of a nice guy, John.
So, we're going to talk about all these things and, of course, get to your emails. Thank you so much, as Andy says, for getting in touch with them. But let me start off with a story which we have talked about quite a bit on the show recently, but we haven't had the chance to talk to the company involved, and that is Sky. Now, recently, of course, we heard the news that Sky Q, the set-top box, would have accessibility built in the form of voice guidance and some other features as well. Joining me now to tell us all about the wonderful new features and to find out about other features coming down the line, let's join Fraser Stirling. Now, Fraser is from Sky, and he joins me now to talk about all these wonderful new features. Fraser.
Oh, yeah. So, first of all, thanks for having me. It's nice to hear a familiar accent, for the record. Just want to go on the record. I was in America for like 7 years, so it was. It's always nice now to hear it. I think first of all, I think one of the sort of principles we have in our product team here at Sky, not just for Sky Q, but for all of our products, is like more accessible products are better for everyone. Period. Right. And it's not always that the accessibility features like the ones we're going to talk about today are just there for this part of the community. Actually, they're better for everyone, and they're better for everyone sometimes because the feature makes the product work better for everyone. But more importantly, I think specifically around, you know, the one that we've got, which are sort of our talking guide, I always call it talking guide. our voice navigation, is that means that we can bring families together again, you know, around the TV, and they can watch together. And again, making our products more accessible means that more accessible for everybody to enjoy things at the same time, right? Because often is the case, that's not always possible, and we don't want that. So the latest release we've got that's going out the door now, is going out the door and going out the door both, really is sort of really stepping into this area of accessibility. Making our products better for everyone. So first of all, voice guidance, which is amazing. We allows SkyQ to talk to you no matter where you are within the product, which means that a whole suite of people can use and work and watch the TV on their own, you know, all the way through. And that's something that some people have never been able to do on their own before. We did something similar when I was at Comcast, and we heard, just like we have here, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people say, like, I have never been able to do this on my own. Thanks so much. It's amazing. And also, I am now able to watch and choose stuff with TV for the family. I don't need to rely on other people to, like, get on that experience. I'm in charge. I get to choose what we get to watch, and we can get that. So voice guidance for me is class. We've also got a whole new area around BSL, so a British Sign Language section. So if you just say BSL or British Sign Language into the voice remote, or search for that, you get a whole section that allows us to sort of spotlight all the great content we've got on the platform that's got that additional sort of information for people that want to get into the British Sign Language. Subtitling on and off, that's been there for ages, both in the settings and voice. And also now we've got our high contrast mode that really, like, I think, which I know not a number of my family use, that allows really just like to allow a lot higher contrast for people that just need that a little bit extra to see that they can get around the guide and navigate around the guide. So we've got lots and lots more going on. Obviously, we've got audio description across the platform and things, but really in the latest release, we've really sort of pushed into that. And this is going to be a big sort of theme for us ongoing and sort of these types of features.
Can I pick up on the point around audio description? Because I know this is an area a lot of blind people talk about. I shout about it to anybody who will listen. Around audio description and availability of it, you know, Sky do an incredible amount of work making their programs, original content and programs that you bring in from the States, you spend a lot of time and money, I guess, making those audio described so that people like myself can enjoy those programs, which is brilliant. But the challenge I have is when I go or I miss a program, miss an episode, or the box doesn't record, although those days are kind of gone. The days of it not recording and failed record seem to be in the past. But, you know, you might not know that a series is starting, so you might miss the first episode or the first two episodes. And I can't go back and catch up with that program with AD. Or a series has begun, like Your Honor on Sky Atlantic, which is brilliant, and I love it, and brilliantly audio described. But I can't watch the whole box. I can't binge on it because that's not available on demand with AD. Is that something that is likely to change?
Yes, definitely. I think we optimize for linear and we optimize for DVR. That's definitely something that we're going to get to. Right. There's a lot of stuff going on, and obviously we had a massive push in the product into this. Our prioritizing for talking guide and voice navigation, as well as their sign language zone, and really trying to bring out all the content on the platform that's you know, people want to see, that was in the bowels of it before. That has been our priority. Now what we want to do is like really step into the how do we make, you know, the volume of content we have greater. That's subtitles, that's audio description, it's all that stuff. So we're definitely stepping into that, and we're definitely gonna get to that.
Any sense of time frames on that one?
Timing's tough, right? But I think we'll come back to you on that. But I don't have the timing and fingerprints. But it's definitely a focus. I can guarantee you that.
And third party providers. Now, this is an area that affects all TV services that have got any kind of voice guidance built in, whether it be the Fire TV, the Apple TV, TVs that have got built-in voice guidance from Samsung, Sony, LG, Panasonic, whoever. The main interface is always accessible in that sense, but the third-party apps are not. Now, this is something which, as I say, plagues across these services. Is that something Sky is looking to change so that I can use Prime Video, Netflix, Discovery Plus, the services which really bring the entire TV experience that Sky Q offers into one box for most people, is still not there yet for blind people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're a platform, right? So just in the same way that Disney and Amazon and Netflix can take advantage of the platform features we provide, like 4K and HDR and Dolby Atmos, right? And all that good stuff. We also want to be able to take advantage of some of these other features like voice navigation, et cetera, et cetera. Also, by the way, metadata that says what's got AD, what's not, what's signed, what's not, right? So we want to be able to take advantage of all of that. So our next port of call, which as you imagine, if voice guidance for our content was hard, providing that as a platform service to others is equally as difficult. But that is definitely something we want to do, right? So along with our conversations with some of these other partners, we're going to be starting to expose these capabilities and then work with them to make it, you know, portable and easy for them to develop against as possible. I will say that's a bit further down the road, but it's definitely something that we've built this thing in a way, as will our future products. We've built it in a way that will allow other people to take advantage of it. So now we just have to work with them and to do it in the way that's most scalable for them and sort of biggest value for our customers. So that's on the roadmap, but it's a wee bit further down the road, I'd say. But we hear you. We hear you.
Well, at least we're getting the questions answered, Fraser. I can't ask for more than that. Thank you so much for coming on to Tech Talk. Really good to have you here. You know, let's get into the inbox actually right off the bat on this one, Andy, because I know people have been getting in touch regarding Sky Q.
Yeah, good old friend of the show, Kelly, has got in contact. Hi, gang. Firstly, hope Stephen is feeling better. I've missed this program a lot. Can't wait for it to come on back again soon. Well, Kelly.
Well, now it's back. I'm wondering if she's feeling the same way.
I thought that I would give you my review on the voice guidance on Sky Q. First of all, the only access we had was Sky Talker, which was a small unit which sits on the set-top box.
I remember
it
that.
Wasn't great, and you only had access to the TV channels and nothing else. The speech on it was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Now we have voice guidance on Sky Q, and it's made a huge difference to accessibility. Although it's still in its infancy, we have tons of information. The speech is very clear to understand, and the navigation couldn't be simpler. However, I am a little disappointed on the catch-up programs, as there are no subtitles and no audio description. The good thing is that if you go to the TV guide, you would know which programs are audio described. It would be nice if the programs that we are catching up on also had AD, but I think that will come eventually. It is so nice not having to rely on a sighted person telling you what's on the screen. Yes, we had to wait for it, but it was worth the wait. So well done, Sky. Now, before I go, I have another tune to recommend for Tech Talk. Kelly has this habit of recommending new theme songs for us. Okay. He's recommended Technologic by Daft Punk. You might like that one a little better. Take care. That's from Kelly in Loxwood.
I do like a bit of Daft Punk in my life. So, yeah, maybe that could work for me. Yeah, maybe go and look that one up.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I do. I know what Daft Punk is. Don't suggest to me I don't know what that is. Do you know what? I'll tell you who else I know about. Dua Lipa. Yes, I know Dua Lipa. I've got no idea what Dua Lipa is, but I've heard Dua Lipa's music, and I like it.
Like something they do in figure skating during the Olympics? I'm not sure.
Oh, that was okay, very impressive, Dua Lipa.
Wow. Yeah, oh, that's good. That's what turned out nice.
I think this is good news about Sky, that it's finally coming.
Yeah, Sky.
I
mean,
we've had this sort of kind of in the United States. Unfortunately, I had to get a Fire TV Cube to get some more navigation with my on-screen menus, because the provider that I'm with, the general, you know, kind of catch-all box that you get, did have accessibility when it came to pairing with an app that you could use on your phone. And then they decided, oh no, if you want to use the app, you've got to upgrade to this other higher end box. Oh, and by the way, we've instituted on-screen description of what's going on and you know, voices to the on-screen description. Oh yeah, but you have to upgrade to this higher end box for that as well. So if you have that other box, too bad. You've got to spend like another, you know, $50 a month to get the other box. So
wow.
It's like it's there, but you have to upgrade and pay a lot more money, and I'm just not into that. So I'm glad to see that this is finally coming for you guys, at least with Sky Q.
So I'm assuming what you're talking about is the Comcast box.
Actually not. This is with Dish Network, although Comcast is very similar in that respect, that it does read the on-screen as well.
The reason I mention that is because Fraser himself, he alluded to it slightly in that interview there, but yeah. You know, Fraser worked at Comcast. Comcast is now part of Sky. I don't ask me how it all fits together. I think one owns the other, and I'm sure it's the Comcast that owns the Sky bit rather than the other way around. But with that relationship actually brought about a lot of this learning that had already been done. So, you know, it was part of their arrangement, I guess, to try and build in this capability. So really smart, actually. Worked out really well for us as blind people here in the UK. But, you know, also to Kelly's point, you heard me ask the question, Kelly, you know, when will audio description be coming on demand? And we're getting the answer, well, yeah, it's coming soon. It's on the roadmap. And that at least is something. I know it always feels like, when will it be here? I guarantee you, though, for all the people who say, well, when's it coming? When's it coming? When it arrives, we're all going to be jumping up and down and we'll forget we ever even asked the question. That's how it feels now with voice guidance. A lot of people like to say, well, you know, it's taken so long to get here. Personally, I'm just glad it's here. And I love it. I think it's a fantastic feature. No point asking Robin what he thinks because he doesn't know what television is. So
I feel exactly the same way about the RNIB Talking Books service on the Echo. When's that coming? And I'll leap up and down when that comes.
It's coming soon, Robin.
Yeah, they keep saying that.
Well, patience. I'm telling you, it's coming soon. I might know something. I might not know something. I can't say.
How
I'm under strict instructions.
That was a film reference.
I can tell you that it might be here before Santa Claus. That's all I can tell you.
Which year?
Right. He doesn't specify the year, just before Santa Claus, sometime, yes.
Okay, so let's move on, because Negative Julian got in touch with us. You might remember a while back on the show, we had Devinda Kular join us from the Technology for Life team to tell us all about the wonderful world of the Google Lookout app. Well, Negative Julian decided to get in touch to share his thoughts on the review and share his own review with us.
Hello team, Negative Julian here. I've just been listening to your latest podcast, the one in which Devinda Kular did a test of Google Lookout, and I'm very glad he did, and I'm very glad you played it, and he sounds like a lovely chap, and I highly value everybody at the RNIB, splendid. But I thought the test was rather full of gaps, particularly in that it didn't mention documents mode, which is terribly important, and the food labelling test, well, he did one tin can and it wasn't very successful, was it? So I want to do a quick test of my own. I'm going to start with the documents mode. I think that's still terribly important because, well, maybe you're so efficient you don't get any printed matter anymore. I certainly do. The government sends me loads of it. Even the good old NHS, although they know I cannot see my hand in front of my face, still insist on sending me test results, consultants' opinion and all that sort of stuff in printed format, which is all very important. So if I didn't have good OCR, I would be well and truly stuffed. So we're going to do that, and then I'm going to do the food. So let's
folder,
get in.
Page 1 of 1. Lookout. Lookout documents. Turn camera on. Button.
Right.
Selected. Documents.
Right. Mode,
4 of 5. In list. 5 items.
Right. So, just to tell you that the document I have in front of me is a real one. It's a page from the invitation to have a COVID test. There's no personal details on that. Don't worry. And I'm going to start by deliberately misaligning the camera a bit so you will hear the instructions as to how to move it to get it framed properly.
Turn camera on. Turn camera off. Button. Move device right. Move device towards top right. Too close. Move device away. Move device towards top left. Try taking a snapshot to scan what's in view. Move towards top left. Top left. Move device right. Move right. Try taking a snapshot to scan what's in view. Move device left. Hold still. Scanned item details. Close details button.
There you go. I was particularly inefficient getting it framed there, but we got there in the end. I didn't push the take snapshot button. I let the device take the picture when it thought it should. So let's see what we got.
Camera Can you catch COVID-19 from the vaccine? You cannot catch COVID-19 from the vaccine, but it is possible to have caught COVID-19 and not realize you have the symptoms until after your vaccination appointment. The most important symptoms of COVID-19 are recent onset of any of the following: a new continuous cough, a high temperature, a loss of, or change in, your normal sense of...
So that, I think, was pretty clear and pretty successful. And by the way, it does the translation from photo to text very, very quickly. I mean, you're talking literally a blink of an eye to do a sheet of A4. So very fast. Now, let's go into food labeling.
Explore. Date. Food labels. Turn camera on. Button. Out of list.
Right, I've got five or six items here, and I will scan through them and see what happens.
Turn camera on. Button. Turn camera off. Button.
First item coming up.
No product as the no added sugar apple and blackcurrant squash. No product in view. HP sauce.
Next one.
No product in view. Heinz cream of tomato with a hint of basil dry cup soup. No product in view.
One.
Simpson strawberry tin sponge pudding.
Now you know what healthy diet I have. Something else here. What's this
no
one?
No product in
yes,
view.
Yes, we're coming.
Happy Shopper peach slices in light syrup drained whey 250 grams 12x 411 grams.
And I think this is the last one. What do we got? Whoa, dropping it. What have we got here?
Taylors of Harrogate Flying Start coffee bags, 10 enveloped bags.
Right.
No product. Turn camera on. Button.
So there we did, I don't know, six or seven items. They weren't all big brands. Some of them were, well, it was Happy Shopper and Asda, for instance. And there were a variety, tins, cartons, all that sort of thing. And it got all of them, and pretty quickly, I would say. So I'm pleased with that. I don't know what you think. Now, that was my test of Google Lookout. And now I'm going to tell you, in fact, you've got two tests for the price of one. The second test being... Over the last couple of years, you've occasionally mentioned the advantages, or in your terms, disadvantages, of cheaper smartphones. So this seems like a good time to tell you that I just did my test of Google Lookout on a Xiaomi A2 smartphone. That's a 2018 vintage smartphone. I believe when first released, it cost about £230. I didn't pay £230 for it. I bought this phone second-hand, beginning of last year, on eBay for £93. Now, my question to you is, listening to that test, could you tell? And I'd also point out it was multitasking like crazy because I did the entire thing on this phone, no external equipment. So it was running Google Lookout. It was running TalkBack with a vocalizer voice. And it was running the voice recording software all at the same time. So I'll ask you, if you were an average sight impaired person at home, not somebody at work using it professionally, but somebody at home just wanting a good tool to help you get through your day, would this satisfy you, particularly at the sort of price we're talking about? That's my question. As per all the best exam questions, discuss. This is Negative Julian saying cheerio.
Well, thank you, Negative Julian. And, you know, Robin, I know you were worried during that there, saying, you know, we keep calling him Negative Julian. He calls himself Negative Julian. That's how he's chosen to name himself. If that is how Negative Julian wishes to identify, we cannot say anything.
Yeah, who are we to say otherwise until he decides to change it? Okay,
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. But good to hear your thoughts on the Google Lookout app. It's funny, I keep getting the Android phone out every so often, and I do this thing where I'll kind of play around with it for a while and think, this is actually really good. But it's I keep going back to that central point of, I love iMessage, I love FaceTime, and we've tried different things. I've tried Google Duo with Andy, because obviously you don't have FaceTime.
Nope.
And the Messages thing I don't understand, because there is a Messages app, but isn't there like a new Messages app as well? There's like an updated, but I can't seem to get my head around what Messages is anymore for an Android phone.
No.
So I don't get it.
Google are famed for launching products and then getting rid of them 6 months later anyway. So
I'm glad you said that.
Duo and all sorts. It's just a big mess.
Speaking of big mess, Windows. That wasn't quite the link I was going for, to be honest, but it kind of worked. So, Windows, the next iteration of Windows is being launched on the, or at least being announced on the 24th of June. So it looks like the idea that Windows 10 would be the last Windows operating system, and it would always just be Windows 10, seems to be going away. There's talk of it being renamed Windows 11, which I guess is fair enough. I mean, it makes sense. But what are we expecting? What are we thinking about on this? And what do we want to see? I mean, I've got a few things in my list. But Tim, have you any preferences for what might be or what you think might be coming?
I honestly have no idea what they're going to do. I have a lot of wish list things, but they're more application specific than they are actual operating system specific, because honestly, I just feel very comfortable with Windows at this point. Windows 10, I can find what I want very quickly. I can navigate and do everything that I want without really any barrier. So I honestly don't know if there's anything operating system wise that I'm really just going crazy for. I mean, there's little things here and there that, you know, kind of like the iOS experience, you know, and they're addressing that this year with notifications and all that. So, I mean, if I really had to drill down, I think maybe making alerts better, you know, across the board, notifications a little bit more manageable, you know, some more settings for them. Otherwise, I mean, for me, it comes down to, you know, update the ribbon in Office products.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, or get rid of it, or make it, you know, more accessible or something, or, you know, things like that. You know, make Skype catch up now to what Zoom and everybody else has done the last year
make
during the
Skype
pandemic.
Dead.
Make Skype dead. Well, if they're not going to fix it, then yes, kill it off. Because
we don't need
it
anymore.
We don't. Well, I mean, we don't, but I'm sure there are people out there. And Skype for Business is still very popular with a lot of corporations and government, you know, organizations and things. But
yeah, right.
I know. But I mean, yeah, if they're not going to fix it and update it, then yeah, just go ahead and get rid of it. Take a play out of Google's book and just
kill it off. The thing is, right, Teams Lite or whatever they're going to call it, you know, Teams for Home, or maybe they'll come up with a different name for that. But I think that's something that should happen because you know, that's kind of that's the bit that needs to happen in order for Skype to die. That's why people are still using Skype.
I mean, Skype as a brand, I think, is still very strong. And actually, the Skype codex and kind of backbone is what Teams uses. They just don't call it that. So, you know, it'll live on. But yeah, sort of a Teams Lite or Teams for Life
is
rumored as. Sorry?
What do you fancy in a new version of Windows? What would you be excited about?
Well, that Teams for Life thing is rumoured as being the next kind of Chrome OS, you know, like a Teams book that Microsoft might bring out. Not on this particular event, but yeah. So Windows 11, strongly rumoured as being called that. They are also strongly rumouring that Windows 10 will remain alongside for business, because the last thing that IT pros or support want to do is get a new version of Windows when the other one isn't broken. There's rumours that they will stay with Windows 10 in kind of just updating, you know, with minor features, etc., going forward. And Windows 11 will be the consumer-based or consumer-facing one. It will have updated UI, bigger touch targets, rounded corners of all the rectangles and everything, look a lot more like iOS and macOS. The one thing that was part of this relaunch, which they apparently haven't pulled off, is sorting out the mess. That link actually wasn't far off the mark, because the under the hood, Windows is a hairball.
Yeah.
It's a real mess, and they just can't sort out the legacy kind of issues with drivers and stacks and all kinds of problems. So part of that was to be that it would be a much slimmer, faster operating system. Apparently, they haven't pulled that off. So what we're going to see in Windows 11 is a new UI, and not a lot else, and a harmonized store, app store. The rumor is with Android apps in as well, which is quite interesting.
Well, hang on. So when you say new operating system, do you mean that they're going to start from the ground up again? I mean, is that what Windows 11 will be, essentially a rebuild? I mean,
no,
big
it's just going to be
the M1, you know, big Mac OS on the M1, but they basically started again with Mac OS.
Yeah, because it was a new architecture. Yeah. That's what they wanted to do, but apparently they haven't managed it yet. And this Windows Core OS, which is the project that will enable them to do that, is going very, 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 very slowly and not very well.
They've got to do that, though. They've got to do that.
They absolutely have to.
Need to start because, from the beginning.
Yeah, because Intel hasn't, you know, their progress is glacial. So they need to get performance benefits elsewhere. And that's what this Core OS completely recode was all about. But yeah, they haven't managed it. Their progress is pretty glacial in this area as well. So according to Paul Thurrott of Windows Weekly, this is lipstick on a pig, he said. So Windows 11, internal Knope Sun Valley, is basically just a new UI for consumers so they can have a new shiny thing, which will hopefully sell more laptops to individuals working from home.
Yeah, it's good to see Paul that, you know, holding back as he often does. Paul's not one for going off the deep end at all.
Robin referred to it as a hairball underneath. I was trying to find an analogy or a metaphor to make a hairball better, but I couldn't think of one. So
it's not a bad design or a bad description of the design, is it? Let's be honest. I mean, it is a bit of a mess. I think for me, the thing I'm quite excited about is the link between Google and Microsoft, actually. And I think that there's something in this. The one thing that always drags me back to the Mac, specifically the Mac, as well as some of the other Apple products, is that unified approach. Now, they've tried this for a long time, trying to unify Windows PCs with certain brands of smartphones. You know, I think Dell have their own version called Mobile Connect, which is their software that lets you link your phone with your device, but it's not the most accessible. It's flaky at the best of times, and it doesn't give you all the functionality. And, you know, we've seen with Samsung, they've tried to do this with their own laptops, with their own software. So, you know, it'd be nice to see Microsoft and Google at the heart of Android actually building this together. I mean, we know Microsoft and Google are working together. Look at the Surface Duo. You know, that's running Android, right? That's a Microsoft product running Android. So it's clearly possible. It's just how they can do it. We'll see.
Well, we certainly know that the Your Phone app on Windows 10 can let you see your Android phone.
Yes.
As far as I know, it's just a picture of your Android phone.
That's right.
Yes, you can tap on things or click on things to interact, but it's, you know, it's not accessible for us. Who knows if the Android apps that are rumoured to appear in the new harmonised or unified store, app store, in the new Windows 11 will, you know, be similarly inaccessible. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, we shall see. So the news of Windows 11 or whatever they call it will be out on the 24th of June. And when we're all back together again, we will discuss the updates. Can't see if... one thing I know about Microsoft is obviously they'll continue to develop Narrator and all of their accessibility functionality. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe that will see some more features in accessibility, which would be great. Anyway, all that to come. But for now, let's turn to the subject of diabetes. Diabetes Awareness Week. And as part of that, we thought we'd look into the type of technology that is out there to help blind and partially sighted people monitor their own diabetes. With me now is Torsten Blum from RNIB's Technology for Life team. He is here to tell us about his findings as he's been looking into this for the past couple of years. Torsten, good to have you on Tech Talk.
Yeah, hello, Stephen.
So let's talk about the tech around diabetes. It is Diabetes Awareness Week this week, and I thought it'd be really interesting to ask you, and specifically you, for a reason, because this is something you've been looking into for a number of weeks and months, and I guess years now, is the technology behind diabetes monitoring. What tech is out there that can help someone monitor their diabetes?
Well, that only... two things I know at the moment, which would work very nicely. It is once the Freestyle Libre system, which is a little bit, let's say, cheaper than the Bluecon system. But I think both of them are using the same technology, what is behind it. So that means that you have a part connected to your armpit, that would be the Freestyle Libre, for example, or connected to your body directly to the skin. It is the Bluecon, which is under your clothing. The Bluecon is directly connected with per Bluetooth via Bluetooth with your mobile, for example, if you've got an Android or an iPhone. And those both devices, they will send you an alert if your blood sugar is too low or too high. So you have not to pick blood from your finger and measure that, so it can make it much more easy for you to have your blood sugar under control. But the FreeStyle Libre is a device where you can get alerts with the FreeStyle Libre 2 if you're using it. That's also gives you an alert via Bluetooth, but you have to measure the blood sugar directly on the device. That means that you have to put your mobile directly to the FreeStyle Libre sensor, which is connected to your arm, and then you can hear the measurement result through your mobile.
Okay, so it's using the combination of the smartphone and the device as well. So you can have the information given to you audibly by the phone. If you're blind, I guess you would use something like VoiceOver or TalkBack iPhone or Android device to get that information. So is that the only way these days? Because, I mean, it would seem to be the case that, you know, I guess, like everything else, everything seems to go through the hub that is the smartphone. Is that the case with all this tech as well, at least like the accessible tech?
Yeah, it seems to be like that. Well, if you're not blind or partially sighted, then you can use for example, for the FreeStyle Libre, then there is an extra device you can get for the FreeStyle Libre, and then you can scan the sensor directly with this device, so you don't need a smartphone. But that's not usable as a blind or partially sighted person, so you have to use your smartphone, for example, to measure your blood sugar directly.
Torsten, great to have you on. Thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts on this tech that I know you've spent a lot of time researching, so thank you for that. And thanks for coming on to the show.
Yeah, thanks again for interviewing me, and have a nice time.
Thanks, Torsten. And if you have any suggestions or ideas or technology that you're using, maybe you've found a way of simplifying the technology you have through the use of a different smartphone app, keep going back to the Be My Eyes or the Aira approach to mainstream technology that perhaps in and of itself is not accessible. So, for example, a blood sugar monitor that you can't see could be made visual to you or made aware to you through an app like Be My Eyes. So maybe there's a way around it for those who, you know, can't afford or don't have access to the specialist type. But very interesting. Many thanks to Torsten for coming on and telling us all about that kind of technology at this Diabetes Awareness Week. Okay, let's now talk about recording. Lots of us like to do that, and perhaps you might want to record notes, simply just a note, or perhaps you want to take down a phone number, or perhaps you want to record a podcast. Well, there are lots of apps and services out there that can help you do it via your smartphone. But Chris Turner's here from the Technology for Life team to tell us about one app he's tried, which has lots more functions than just recording capabilities.
Hello, this is Chris from the Tech for Life team. Today I'm going to talk to you about recording audio on the iPhone. First, I'm going to talk about using the camera app. One of the things I find most frustrating about the iPhone, there aren't many, but this one does annoy me, is the difficulty of getting stuff on and off it. I'm a Windows user, and the way you're supposed to get content on and off your phone, between your computer and your phone, is by using Apple's iTunes software. Now, to be frank, I find this software horrendous. It's too clunky, too big, tries to do too much, and I've not used it for years. So, if I record something on the phone, how do I get it off? Well, if we look at the default apps we have available, you can share things with the Voice Memos app. You know, you can share them to iCloud, the files. I think you can export them to email and so on. However, if you use the camera app in video mode, there's an easier way. You might be thinking, hold on, camera? I don't want visuals. Why am I using an app for audio? Well, when you record a video, it obviously does record the audio. But a neat little trick is if you connect your phone to the PC using the usual lightning cable, about one of the only things you can browse to in there are the photos and videos folder. So having connected your phone to your PC, you need to tap on the notification on the screen to allow access. You can then find it as Apple iPhone, then internal storage. There will be another folder. It's not intuitively named, but basically it's the only folder you can get to. Open that, and you can recognize any video files as they will have the extension .mp4. Once you've found the file, you can open it in an editor like Goldwave, Audacity, or Reaper. I tend to use Goldwave. From there, you can make any edits you want, but then save it as a sound file, you know, like WAV or MP3, and it will basically just throw the video part away. With the one exception, if you do that in Reaper, because Reaper does have some basic video editing capability, it will actually keep the image. But Goldwave and Audacity are purely audio editors. So this way, it's a much more convenient way of getting audio that you've created off your phone onto your PC to do whatever you want with it, edit it or store it elsewhere. That said, I'm going to talk about a very useful app called Just Press Record. It's not free, it's $4.99 in the App Store. It's only available on the iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. It provides a very quick way of recording audio. You can also use external microphones and record high-quality audio, 24-bit, 96 kHz. I should give a shout-out to Scott Wood at the RNIB, who told me about this app several years ago. I've been using it ever since. One of its cool features as well, it will translate speech into text. Okay, I'll now do a quick demonstration, an overview using VoiceOver, so you can hear how it performs.
Just press record. Recents is currently empty. In Recents, you can quickly get to your most recent recordings. Tap the record button to start recording. Down arrow. Input. Button. Record. Button. Settings. Button. Tab bar. Selected. Recents. Browse. Tab. Search. Tab. Watch. Tab. 5 of 5.
Okay, I've just done the two-finger double tap, the magic tap, to start recording. Let's see if it'll pick up what I'm saying and translate it into text.
10. Play. But 10, today at 10, 0, 12, comma, ellipsis, position, 86, 0, 9, 0, 3, toolbar, share, 0, 0, position, 8, okay, I have just done the two-finger double tap, the magic tap to start recording, let's see if it will pick up what I'm saying and translate it into text, text field, position, 86, 0, 9, 0, 3, toolbar, share, button, share, share recording, button, share transcript, button, share recording and transcript, button, share video clip, ellipsis, cancel button.
Okay, so as you heard, pretty much got that 100% accurate bit of transcription. It was only short, of course, and you have to speak fairly clearly. It's not going to cope too well if there are multiple voices. Certainly if people are talking across each other, you're not going to get the best results, but it's very handy nonetheless. A couple of other things to notice. When you make a recording, by default, it will have a file name as a timestamp. That's all very well if you remember what you recorded when, but if you're reviewing them several weeks later, there's no way of knowing what they are unless you played a file. I haven't found a way where you can edit or rename the files themselves. Regarding editing, it is possible to edit the waveform within the app itself. However, I think this is a bit fiddly with VoiceOver, so this is another reason why I'd like to get the audio off this onto my computer, where I can use something like Audacity or Goldwave. To do this, you tap the share button. When I did this, you may have heard I was given the choices to share audio, audio plus transcript, transcript or video clip. Now, I'm not sure what it's doing with video clips. As far as I know, it doesn't use the camera to record anything. So whether there's a stock image or perhaps it uses an animation of the waveform, I'm not sure. I would need to get someone to check. I think it's aimed at people that want to make a recording on their phone and then immediately upload it to a service like YouTube or Instagram. When you've chosen what you want to share, you're given the usual options like being able to send it via a message, in WhatsApp, email, and so on. But also, you can directly save it to third-party apps like Google Drive, iCloud Drive, and Dropbox. I tend to use Dropbox, I just find it a bit easier, a bit more intuitive. Anyway, I hope you found that useful. That's Just Press Record, $4.99 in the App Store. Well worth it, in my opinion. You've always got your phone with you, so it's a very handy and quick way to get those ideas down, whether it's an audio memo or perhaps even a music idea, since the iPhone does now record in stereo from the built-in mic. That gives it that extra bit of quality. But as mentioned earlier, you can use external microphones and also record at those higher rates of 24-bit 96 kHz. As usual, if you've got any questions and need to reach the Tech for Life team, give us a call via the helpline 0303 123 9999 or email at tfl@rnib.org.uk.
Thank you, Chris. And Robin, I know you've got another one you use all the time.
Yeah, it used to be called Dropbox, one word, and now it's called RecUp. They changed its name, one word still, RECUP. And it's just so simple because you can set it up so that when you open the app, it starts recording straight away. And when you hit the home button or, you know, swipe up from the bottom to close the app, then it stops recording and it sends it to a designated folder in Dropbox. So for me, you know, catching things on the while I'm on the move and then just being able to grab them on my desktop afterwards and bring them straight into Audacity, you know, for editing, I love that. So yeah, not as functional as Just Press Record, say, but I really like it.
Well, it's the horses for courses thing, isn't it? I mean, you're going to take that audio, you're going to work on it on a computer. Mm-hmm. So you'd probably rather have it that way, where you're just using the device as a recorder. And the great thing is, should you record that interview with, you know, Dame Judi Dench by accident, you record it, you hit stop, it's then in the cloud. You don't have to worry if someone steals your phone 5 seconds later. Well, I mean, obviously you will worry because someone's just stolen your phone. But, you know, at least you don't have to worry about losing the interview. You just worry about losing everything else. Anyway, moving on. It's time for emails.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Every day.
Here's your mail today.
Bing bong. Andy's here with the inbox.
Yes, I'm here.
Still don't get the doorbell. Right, okay. What's in the inbox this week?
So do you remember the last time we sat here talking about emails? We got halfway through an email from Nadia. And we said, we'll pick up the rest of that email next week. Well, 6 weeks later, here we are.
It's not bad for us.
Yeah, so she was having tech problems. So the second part of this email is actually Sky related. I recently installed the Sky Go app on my Android phone and tablet. Just a heads up for other listeners, the app on the Android is really accessible, but the Windows app for laptops and desktops is really not. Anyway, all was going well with Sky Go. It was one of the easiest and most accessible apps that I'd ever used. And then out of the blue, it decided it wouldn't work anymore. It gets about 10 minutes into an episode and then it cuts out. And then you start the episode again. It picks up more or less from where you were when you cut off. But then a few minutes later, it cuts off again. I tried Google and the advice was to go into settings and disconnect it from the Sky Q box. I tried that and it made no difference. I contacted Sky, and they said that I should uninstall and reinstall the app. Of course they did. And that also made no difference. I'd given up, and now I watch on-demand stuff on my Sky Q box. I believe this isn't just an Android problem from what I saw on Google, and so far I've only tried using the app on my tablet, not on my phone. Also, there doesn't seem to be any kind of error message coming up at all. Have any of you experienced this before, and is there a reason for it? Admittedly, neither of these things are the end of the world, and I can still call my parents and anyone else, and I can still watch Sky on demand, but it's really annoying. I was trying to use my Echo to make phone calls whilst I was having problems with my mobile, as it was free and it would have been a good backup, but it wouldn't work, so I had to plug in my crackly landline phone instead. Take care, everyone. That's from Nadia.
But the short answer is no, I've not experienced that. But it's interesting, Nadia, because you've got in touch before with a very similar problem with your Amazon Echo, wasn't it? The Audible app or whatever it was on the Echo wouldn't play your book. It would play 10 minutes and then it would stop. And I'm just thinking, an interesting correlation here between, you know, it almost seems coincidental, doesn't it? But I'm just wondering, and I mean this in all seriousness, are you maybe on some kind of plan with your internet provider that only allows you so much data access? Or
it sounds like a bandwidth or packets, you know, downloading or whatever. It sounds like
there's a limit somewhere, doesn't it? Because I mean, if the same thing happened on the Echo, now it's happening on the TV apps.
Update the router firmware, maybe.
Possibly, yeah.
Or get in contact with them, and they'll send you a new one because chances are there's a new version.
Yeah.
If it's older than, say, 2-3 years, probably contact the provider and see if they can send you a new one. If it's you know, newer than that, then yeah, definitely try to update the firmware. Yeah, talk to the internet service provider, because
I don't think it's an issue.
It sounds like a bandwidth issue.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like an issue with the service. It does sound more like an app issue, but okay. Interesting. Thanks, Nadia. I hope you can get that resolved. Let us know how you got on. Okay, let's get another email.
Hello all. I've got a couple of things to talk about, says Paul in Derbyshire. Firstly, with regards to the aftershocks, I don't know why, but the volume on the phone doesn't work separately to the headset. The turning down the phone and then turning up the headset does help reduce vibration. Now, this goes back to an email we had a couple of weeks ago, because there was a control function on the aftershocks that you could control, and it was giving you all sorts of vibrations, wasn't it, Stephen?
Well, I think I was saying at the time, from memory, that I was saying that, you know, I don't like it too loud because it does feel like it's vibrating. But then there was a conversation back and forth with some people who were saying, well, you can actually independently control the volume. The volume of the headphones is not the volume of the phone. So you can turn the phone down, headphones up, and it avoids the vibrations. So maybe that's the solution. I'll need to look into it more. That's terrible. I haven't picked them up since. But primarily because I'm not going anywhere, so I'm barely using them.
Yeah.
Maybe when I'm out and about more. In fact, I'm out and about next week, so I'll take them with me and we'll try and see how it goes.
Continuing Paul's email. Secondly, with regards to TVs, all LG WebOS TV sets come with voice guidance built in. All info, such as volume, channel settings, etc., work, but third-party apps have the same lack of support mentioned before by Stephen. With regards to the radio the RNIB have launched, it's amazing that they can produce a radio that is not accessible for the blind and also redundant. I use a pure DAB radio available from many shops that do a better job. It has tactile buttons with knobs, and it makes it easy to use. Yes, you need a sighted person to help set it up, but you can get so many more presets. Using a smart speaker for the radio is all well and good, but you cannot listen to local sport on a local station via a smart speaker, or such as TuneIn on radio. Now, some time ago, Pure did sell a radio that spoke station names, and it was really good. So it is possible. There's early DAB when the second generation of DAB came out. Less and less stations were available on this radio, and as far as I'm aware, they did not release an updated version. Personally, I find it so frustrating that there's not an accessible radio for the blind. Like Robin, I don't watch TV. AD is not always available, and generally the content is poor. So I get much more from listening to sports on the radio and live from the presets. The way I get most of my radio is via my LG TV, which has voice guidance, and the radio stations start at channel number 701. Like Stephen, I am an Apple fanboy, and I don't think about whether I can use one of their products. If I buy an Apple product, I know it will work and I know it will be accessible. All the best. Keep up the good work. That's from Paul in Derbyshire.
Paul, very clever guy, Paul. He knows his stuff. Very smart man. I think that's the point, though, isn't it? About the whole accessible radio thing. I suppose my go-to now is the Echo. The one issue I would say about that, as much as I love the Echo, it's the discovery aspect that bothers me. There isn't the sense of discovery. You know, something about radio, you know, going up and down the dial, you know, that sense of finding something to listen to. You don't get that with the Echo. You have to know what you want to listen to. I don't know if that plays a part for you, Paul, particularly, but, you know, for me, that was always my thing.
I mean, something like the BBC Sounds built-in functionality in the Echo now. Once you're in that skill, open BBC Sounds, then you can say, you know, what are your dramas? What are your this? What are your that? So there's a lot of discoverability within that. Mm. Yeah.
But you still have to know what you're looking for and what you're asking.
That's the thing, yeah.
As opposed to the good old days of just hitting the scan button on your radio and, oh, what's this? I mean, I do that sometimes still when I'm in the car. Say my wife and I go somewhere and I'm just like, well, I'll just sit in the car. You're just going to run in for a few minutes. You know, I'll just sit here so you don't have to drag me around the store. And I'll do that. If there's a song that comes on and I'm not sure that I really like it, I'll hit the scan button and find something else. And I've discovered a lot of music that way. And you just... like you were saying, Robin, you if you know what genre or what type of music you're looking for, fine. But if you're just wanting to randomly look for things, it's very difficult today.
Okay, let's get one more email in because we're running short of time, Andy. Let's get one more.
So this one's in from William. Hello, Andy, Robin and Stephen. He doesn't give Tim a mention.
Shocking.
Right, so he starts off with the conversation we were having, I think, the last time Kelly suggested music for us. If you're playing music on a podcast, then as long as you keep it under 10 seconds, then my understanding is it comes under the fair dealing rules as far as copyright is concerned. But I could be wrong. I think the radio version just has all the swear words taken out. Yes, as someone who does that job, I can confirm the radio versions has all the sweary bits removed. I can't help but wondering if maybe the reason why Lady A is better than Google Home could be because no one uses it. So Google wouldn't have the amount of feedback that Amazon do.
Okay.
Now that we know that Robin...
It's only about a billion of them on the planet.
Well, this bit gets a bit controversial. Oh. Now that we know that Robin is essentially being paid by Amazon by way of free stuff, I'll take whatever he says about it with a pinch of salt.
Ah, you better off your own back there, Robin.
Spoonful of salt, definitely, yeah. I am in the pocket, in the pay of...
Yish.
He is joking, of course.
I'm kind of glad that my name wasn't mentioned on this email now.
Yeah.
I'm feeling better about myself. This was directed negatively for some of you, and that means I'm in a positive light. At least that's how I'm going to
Well, the email's not over yet, so you never know.
No, well, this is true. Jaws being offered at a discounted rate sounds great until you remember that NVDA is free. So if NVDA is good enough, why would anyone pay for anything for Jaws? Is Jaws that much better than NVDA, or just that since it costs around 700 UK pounds, people assume that it may be better or they wouldn't charge so much for it? You'd think, by the other way around, regarding accessibility of iPhone apps, i.e. large app developers do a better job with accessibility than small companies and independent developers because they're the ones with the time and the resources to do it. I also wanted to pick up something that one of your listeners said in episode 378. You read out an email about how the DAB radio sold by the RNIB didn't announce the station names. I know the RNIB probably doesn't have the facility to produce their own hardware, but surely they have the people who do quality control and make sure that the products the RNIB plan to sell are fit for purpose. Maybe it'd be worth only ordering a few, getting the TFL team to spend a week playing with them, and then placing a mass order for them to sell. That's an email from William.
Just very quickly on the big apps versus small players. Winston Chen, the voice stream reader guy, single app developer, that's won an Apple Design Award last week. And, you know, that is across all apps, not just, you know, for accessibility or anything like that. So, and it's massively accessible. So I would definitely point people at that brilliant, brilliant app.
Guys, we're out of time. That's it. But thank you so much for being with us. A special gaming episode coming your way. Yes, we're talking all about gaming and how things have changed massively in the last year on the subject of gaming, an area we generally never touched on Tech Talk because gaming wasn't particularly accessible, but that's changing. So that's coming up next week. Keep your feedback coming, though. We love it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Thank you for getting in touch. And we'll catch you next time. Robin, Tim, Andy, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.